Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Commerce Case Study Debugging Common SOLR Support Questions. Today's presenters are Brandon Bella, Conway Chen, and Eric Ruchinski. Brandon joined the Commerce Support Team in 2009. He is a commerce search subject matter expert and was one of the authors of the Commerce Search FEP2 Red Book. Conway joined the WebSphere Commerce Level 2 support team in November 2008 as a staff software engineer. He supports all aspects of WebSphere Commerce, but is a component specialist for catalog, search, deployment, installation, migration, orders, and payments. Eric joined the WebSphere Commerce Level 2 support team in December 2007. In this role, he handles various support concerns from customers. He has been in the software group since 2002 and is in software support since 2006. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Conway.
Thank you, Joseph, and thank you, everyone, for joining today. Please move to the next slide. I will be doing a quick architectural overview to go over some general architecture questions and some of our recommendations, and then we will go into our problem scenarios. I'll cover some misconfiguration of solar search environments that can cause replication problems. Then Eric will go over some pre-processing and indexing issues that we have seen. And finally, Brendan will cover some query scenarios and go over some quick reference material that we hope you will find useful. Please go to page 3. Although an external web server is not really required with a solar search server, we do recommend them for their connection handling benefits, especially in production environments. If a web server is not used and requests are routed directly to the search server HTTP transport port, their search server port value in the search conf and search conf ext tables will need to be updated for the indexing tools to work. Slide number 4, please. When clustering a solar search, we recommend having a master replica that's outside of the search cluster if you are using the web servers. The web server plugin will actually route requests to all members of the search cluster, so if the master is within the cluster itself, the slaves may try to replicate with themselves. We'll go into some further detail in an example later, but if the master must be in the search cluster, the slaves should replicate directly with the master's HTTP transport port. Slide number 5, please. And actually, slides 5 and 6 show our recommended configuration of a production solar-enabled environment. I'm not really going to go into details about the architecture itself, but we wanted to provide these slides for your reference. Now I'm going to talk about some of our problem scenarios. So slide number 7, please. In our first problem scenario, we're able to confirm that the slave detects an updated index on the master replica, but the slave indexes are not being updated. We checked the configurations, and they looked like they're correct, but we see in the slave system out log that the index was unable to download, as highlighted in the slide. Slide number 8, please. We also see in the system out log that there were no files to download for the new index. Slide number 9, please. And we've actually seen two different causes for this behavior. The first cause is that the master and slaves are contained in the same cluster, and the replication requests are being routed through their web servers. In this case, the web server plugin routes requests to both the master and search servers, both master and slave search servers. So if both check and download requests are routed to the master server, the replication will actually be successful. But if either check or download requests are routed to another slave or to itself, it will actually fail. The solution here is to bypass the master's web server and connect directly to its HTTP transport port. You can find the HTTP transport port in the About This profile, About Text file, under the App Server Profile Log directory. In this scenario, for the index tooling to work, you also need to update the search server port in the search conf and search conf EXT tables so the indexing requests are not routed to the slaves. Slide number 10, please. The other cause that we found for this problem is that both master and slave configurations are enabled in the solarconfig.xml. We've seen that solarconfig.xml is sometimes contained in source control, and the wrong copy gets deployed to the slaves. The solution is to remove the master section from the request handler configuration in the slaves. Slide number 11, please. Another problem that we've seen is similar to the previous example in that the slave replica is able to detect that its index version is different from the master, and it can't download the update, but we see the slave's index version and generation change unexpectedly. As we can see here, we see the slave version go from generation 19 to generation 1, and then to generation 23. Slide number 12, please. We found that this was caused by the master replication handler configuration was specified more than once in the master's solarconfig file. This seems to make the slaves that they're replicating with different masters, so that causes the variations in the index version and generation. The solution is to remove the extra master replication handler configuration, and that seems to fix the problem. The solarconfig XML that we ship with Webster Commerce has multiple replication handler sections that are normally commented out so that there are examples for if you're setting up a repeater or a master or slave. So it's easy to miss a section that's not properly commented out. And then next I'll hand it over to Eric, who will take you through pre-processing and indexing issues that you may encounter.
Thank you, Conway. Can we move to slide number 13, please? So this is just a general overview of the pre-process flow about how it works. You invoke the DI pre-process command, which will create the temporary tables inside the Commerce database, and that will start with the TI underscore label. And then it will populate those temporary tables based on the definitions that you have defined in your pre-process XML files. And then once the data has been populated into the tables, the DI preprocess command complete. So move on to slide number 14. And also a quick review of the build index process. You would call the build index process, which would execute a URL that will be invoked on the Solar Server application. The Solar Server will execute queries against the temporary tables that were created in the pre-process command, and then bring back the result, map it to the XML, and then tokenize it and analyze it, and then save it into the Solar Core files. And move on to slide number 15. I also wanted to take a moment here to also provide you an overview about how to gather additional trace data with the problem with build process and pre-process, and build index and pre-process. First, you would modify the login properties file and change all occurrences of info to finest. Then you would most likely want to increase the number of files kept for historical values from 1 to 10. And this is because the DI preprocess and DI built in the command tend to log a lot of data with the finest setting. Additionally, you can also increase the log file size by increasing the limit parameters to a larger number as well, and that is given in byte. Next slide, to slide number 16, please. Now let's take some quick look at some of the issues that we may encounter commonly during the push process. The first common scenario that we would see is mapping to multiple categories, and this can be either product to multiple categories or categories to multiple parent categories inside the master catalog. And that will give us an error. In this case, it's a DB2 error with the SQL code 803 indicating a duplicate row inside the TIAP group_0 table. And the common cause, as I just mentioned, would be having multiple mapping for a single catalog entry to multiple categories or a single category mapped to multiple parent categories inside the master catalog. Slide number 17, please. It is not generally supported to have multiple mapping for the catalog entry being mapped to multiple categories or having a single category mapped to multiple parent categories inside the master catalog. And for having multiple mappings, those would belong to the sales catalog. In this scenario where we have a single catalog entry that's being mapped to multiple catalog groups or categories, you can run the SQL statement against the master catalog ID and see what catalog entries are having multiple mappings to different categories. If there are results returned, you can remove the extra mapping and only have one product to category mapping. Slide number 18. Additionally, we can also look at the trace to see how the issue appears. In this case, it's for the single category being mapped to multiple parent categories. And in the trace, we can see that the category ID number 25076 has the following category hierarchy structure. The first number preceding the underscore is the catalog ID, and the second number is the category ID or the cat group ID. And here we can see that there are two instances where the category ID 25076 is being called up, and it's mapped to two different parent categories, which is 1053 and 10504. Similar to the catalog entry, you want to make sure that you limit yourself to having only one child category and one parent category relationship. You don't want to have multiple relationships defined for a single category being mapped to multiple parent categories. Slide number 19, please. Also, there is an interesting scenario where running the pre-process command can run indefinitely, or eventually it can fail with an out-of-memory error. So we see the Java query data stack showing a repeating stack pattern and calling over and over and over again until it just exhausts itself of memory. Slide number 20, please. And the cause for this would be circular references in the category mapping. For example, if you have a category called pots, and then it falls under pots and pans, and then you have cookware, and then you put all of cookware under the pots category again, it circulates and causes that reference to happen. And you would need to look at the trace to identify which one it is looping on and then remove the circular reference to make sure that it's linear and not looping back onto itself. Otherwise, it will continue to go through that circular process over and over again until it exhausts itself of memory. Slide number 21, please. Another interesting scenario for preprocess is when you're running the preprocess command and then it comes back with an error saying that the column is too small. And the error message itself can be rather cryptic, so you would want to increase the trace to finest to identify which table encountered the import issue. And in the trace sample here, it shows me that I'm looking at a very long line for the product set column. So in this example, it's showing that the value is being populated into a column, but the column is too small to fit the large line, and so it throws the exception. Slide number 22, please. To resolve this issue, you want to modify the schema definition. You can modify the data import preprocess XML and increase the column size. It can be either increasing the bar chart size or you can change it to use a club instead if it exceeds the bar chart limit. In Oracle, I believe the bar chart limit is about 4,000. And if you need to achieve 4,000 characters, you should use a club. Slide number 23, please. If you change the column from a bar chart to a club, you will also need to make sure that you modify the wcdataconfig.xml file to specify that club equals true. And that will let the preprocess command be aware that you'll be inserting a club rather than a bar chart. Slide number 24, please. Now let's talk about the build index and some of the scenarios that they may have there. If we look at the trace and we see that the catalog entry and catalog group index are complete in terms of building, and then we see that the unstructured index is not building at all. However, we wouldn't see an error message in the log. We would just see that there's no unstructured index data in the log. So, for example, in the trace, we can see that the last message for the unstructured build would be what you see on the slide here. And slide number 25, please. Now, the reason for why it behaves like that is that the unstructured index is the catalog entry attachment, and those are the PDF files or test files that you may have. And that utilizes the Tcat entity processes. So if you were to take a Java core of that, you can see that the Tcat entity processor would be showing up in the Java core where it might run the connect statement. And we see that the connect is hanging there indefinitely. And this is commonly caused because of a firewall that exists between the solar application server and the content servers. So if you encountered this, you should open the firewall port between the solar server and the content server to allow the connection and allow the index build to complete. Slide number 26, please. Another interesting scenario would be the Droid crawler. When you crawl the site and you see the error message inside the crawler.log.test, where it says content too long exception. there's actually a hard-coded limit to how much the droid crawler can crawl, which is 512 terabytes. There is an iFix available that can make this a configurable limit. And also, I just wanted to add a mention that when you are passing the solar application on the solar application server, the APOP iFix itself will be delivered as a zip file that you can deploy as a partial application update. And this is different from the typical APOP iFix installation process for the regular commerce application. Slide number 27, please. And on slide number 27, I will go ahead and turn it over to Brendan.
Thanks, Eric. Okay, so far we've covered issues that you see commonly when building the index and issues that you might run into when replicating the index. The last section that we're going to cover is issues that you might see when you're querying the index. So when you're querying the index on the Solr server, you might see issues such as unexpected search results, blank categories, missing data. For example, you might see the cat entries on your storefront, but certain pieces of that category might be missing or cat entry, for example, prices. And also sometimes you might just see a generic error pages thrown and not much else. So if you get something like a generic error page or some of these other errors, I think the natural response is to go into the commerce logs and take a look at, you know, if you get some kind of exception. A lot of the times what you're going to see if the problem is on the Solr server, on the commerce server logs, you're going to see this catalog navigation view exception. And that's basically a generic error for Solr. It's just reporting that there's a problem with either interpreting the data that Solr is sending back or maybe connecting, or you should just treat it as a generic error basically for Solr. So if you get this error, what are the next steps? So I think a lot of customers, they might forget, at least for the first couple of times that they look through Solr, that or that, you know, they run into Solr issues, that Solr is a separate application running on its own profile, so it's in its own JVM, and that means that it's going to have its own logs, so its own trace logs and system out logs and everything like that. And a lot of customers overlook looking at those logs. So if you get a catalog navigation view exception, the first thing that you should do is immediately go over to the Solr trace logs, the system out log, and take a look to see if you get an error there. As we're troubleshooting through Solr issues and we're coming across different Solr errors, you know, we're writing tech notes for common issues and everything like that. So if you see, you know, you might get lucky with an error and you could just do a quick Google search of the error that you see in the Solr server and you might come across a tech note of ours, and then, you know, that prevents having to open a PMR, and that's going to save you time in the long run. Slide 28. So here's an example of a really simple error that if you take a look in the Solr logs, that you're going to find this error and the problem can be solved in like 5 minutes. So Solr side or commerce side, the symptoms that you're going to see, you're going to get a generic error page on the storefront. So then you take a look in the commerce logs and you get this catalog navigation view exception and not a whole lot else. So next step is to go onto the Solr server and take a look at any errors that you might see there. In this case, it's this too many Boolean clauses error. And that's a really simple error. Well, what that's saying is that the query that commerce is sending over to Solr is just simply too large. There's too many terms in that query. And so it's throwing this exception. So this exception has a really simple solution. Basically, on the Solr server, there is a file called the solrconfig.xml that has different Solr configurations. For example, the max Boolean clause parameter. So if you see this too many Boolean clause error, the solution is simply to increase this max Boolean clause parameter to something larger that's going to be able to encompass the size of your Solr query. Slide 29, please. So this next error, it has the same symptoms on commerce side. So basically you get a generic error page thrown on the commerce server. You take a look in the commerce logs, and again, you see that catalog navigation view exception. So next step, go to the Solr logs. You're going to see a different exception here. So just to stress again, the Solr logs play a crucial part in debugging these errors. So here's the exception that we see here. It's a parse exception, and then it says cannot parse, and then there's a whole bunch of funky-looking characters, an encountered end of file, outline one, yada, yada. page 30. Okay, so this is caused, we've seen this a lot, there is a parameter that we use when dealing with facets called metadata, and metadata tracks kind of the customer's history. So if they clicked on facets previously and previous requests, parameters get added to the metadata. We take that metadata parameter and we base64 encode it. So you can see here I have before encoding and after encoding. So before encoding, there's simply the field and the value. So there's two fields and two values here. And then after encoding, it's a string of characters. And I put in red and bold here one character in particular, this plus character. So this metadata parameter is going to be included as part of the URLs when we're generating the storefront page and we're generating the links on the storefront. So it's you'll see the search display command and then all these parameters like search term, scope, search type, et cetera. And then again, this metadata parameter that I put in red here. And it still has that plus. So when a customer clicks on that link, we're sending that URL as is over to the Commerce server. And the Commerce runtime will interpret the plus as a space. So it takes that plus and it turns it into a space. And basically later on when we're decoding the metadata in the Commerce framework, instead of decoding one large encoded line, we're going to be decoding two separate lines separated by that space. And that's when you're going to get that corrupt-looking string that we saw on the previous page. And then we're going to send that over to Solr, and Solr's not going to know what to do with that parameter, and it's going to throw that error. Slide 31. So the solution, if you're on Feature Pack 4, you shouldn't be seeing this problem. We URL encode the base64 encoded data automatically, so you probably shouldn't see this particular error, or if you are running into the error, it might be with a different parameter, custom parameter or something like that. Also, we have this in a fix for Feature Pack 2 and Feature Pack 3, and I have the APAR number there, JR41857. I've included a workaround here. It's a really easy workaround, and some customers have just manually put this in their JSP, and again, it's basically the same thing that the APAR does, just at a different level. So it's encoding in the JSP, and it's URL encoding the metadata. One thing to watch out for, if you do have the workaround in your JSP, if you upgrade to a later Feature Pack level, so say you're upgrading to Feature Pack 4, Feature Pack 4 includes the fix that's URL encoding, so you might run into a scenario where you have metadata double encoded, and that's not good. That's going to cause, again, some kind of, you know, funky-looking characters sent off to Solr. So either have the workaround or have the Commerce solution. Don't do both. So slide 32. Okay, so this last example I have here, there's no error. There's no error on the Commerce server or on the Solr server or anything like that. Basically, this one is you get unexpected search results in a query that you're submitting. So here the customer is searching for the term torch welder, which is actually two terms, torch and welder. We'll get to that later. But so the customer submits the search term torch welder on the storefront. And then he gets some strange results back that don't seem to have anything to do with torch welder. And you're wondering, how can this happen? So in this case, what's probably easiest is to enable foundation tracing on the Commerce server. So here I've put in bold com.ibm.commerce.foundation. If you put .star equals all, you're going to get all the foundation trace, and you're going to be able to see these trace lines that I've included here. So the first thing I always look at is this final Solr query expression. That's the final query that Commerce is going to end up sending over to the Solr server. And then I've kind of color-coded different fields that we're searching here. So the main part of the final Solr query expression is this query. So you can see here we're searching for torch welder, and we're searching three different fields for torch welder. We're searching the name field, default search field, and short description field, all for torch welder. The next lines of trace here are also included with the foundation tracing if you have that enabled on the Commerce server, and that's the result set. So it returns all these Solr documents that match the search. Taking a look at the result set, however, you can see there doesn't seem to be any obvious match. So in short description, we're searching for torch welder, and we return gas cylinder 40. So no match there. And then, again, name, we're searching torch welder, and we're returned gas cylinder. And again, that's not a match. So looking at the results set in the trace, it's not immediately clear why these documents are being returned. Next slide. Another thing that you get when you enable Foundation Trace is we include an extra parameter that we send off to Solr, and it's this debug parameter that Solr is going to send back some additional debug logs that's going to help explain how this match happened. So the bottom part here, I have match, wait, and then in bold, default search, and then welder. So default search is the field that it's matching on, and it's matching on the phrase welder or the term welder. So remember, we were searching for torch welder, and it's specifically matching on welder. It's not matching on torch welder. It's not matching on torch, just welder. So we didn't see default search in the search results. So that was kind of strange. If it's matching on default search, why isn't it returning the search results? So next slide. So fields aren't returned in the search results for two possible reasons. One is that you can limit the number of fields or the fields that you want returned when you send a query off to Solr, and that's by using this FL parameter, which I am going to guess stands for field limit. So I've included an example here. Field limit equals name plus member ID plus MF name. So it's only going to return those three fields and no others. So if we had this FL parameter, it would not return default search. We're not doing that in this case. In this case, we were returning or trying to return every single field that are included in the Solr documents, but it still wasn't returning default search, and that's because of the second reason. When you define the fields in the schema.xml, so this is Solr side, you can have it so that this field is never returned in document results, and that's by the stored parameter. So I have here a field name default search, and then I have some parameters, including the stored parameter, and it's equal to false. So what that means is it's never, ever going to return default search in any of the search queries. So default search is also weird for another reason, and that is it's actually just a mashup kind of a bunch of other fields. It's just copying from other fields. It doesn't really have any data of its own. So that's at the bottom of the slide here, this copy field source. So you can see here it's copying from the name field, from the short description field, from the part number NTK field, from the keyword field, and et cetera. From all of these fields, it's copying, and it's just a mashup of all these fields. So if we're trying to figure out which fields actually contain that phrase torch welder, the way we're going to do it is basically by looking at all these individual fields that default search is a part of. So we can rule out name and short description because those were returned in the search results, and we could see it wasn't matching there. So next up, we're going to start looking at these other fields. So next slide. So the easiest way to do this is probably to query the Solr server directly, and I have a couple of queries here that you just need to put directly in the browser, and you're going to get XML results back. So the first query I have here at the very right-hand part of the query is the actual query. So Q equals part number NTK colon welder. So it's searching the part number NTK field for the value welder. And then I have a screenshot here of the XML document that is returned. And you can see that response, numfound equals zero. So no documents in the part number NTK field contain the term welder. So we can rule out that field. So next query, we're searching the keyword field. So Q equals keyword colon welder. So now we're searching the keyword field for the term welder. And in the screenshot response, you can see that 39 documents match. So we found the field that contained the phrase welder. And actually, in this example, keyword had a phrase something like gas used with welder. So you can see that welder was here. So once you find why the unexpected search results are happening, there's, I guess, a number of different options you can do to remove that from the search results, if that's what you want. You can remove the welder term from the keyword field, so basically change the cat entry so that keyword doesn't contain welder anymore. You can remove keyword from default search, so how default search was a mashup of all those fields, just remove keyword, and it's no longer going to match on that. Also, what you could do is change the default operator. So out of the box, we have a default operator of OR. So when you're searching for torch welder, it's searching for torch or welder. And if there is a match on either of those phrases, torch or welder, it's going to return a search result, or it's going to have a document match. You can change the default operator using a type parameter that we have in Commerce. You can instead use the AND parameter. So now, if you have and you're searching for torch welder, it's only going to return results that match torch and welder. So in this case, because gas used with welder was the phrase, these results wouldn't be returned. Next slide. Okay, so that's the end of our case studies. At the very end here, we just thought it would be helpful to include a quick reference guide. There's a lot of different activities when dealing with solar. There's the whole setting up solar, building the solar index, replicating the solar index, querying solar, and all of these different activities are going to have different logs and different files that are touched. So this is just a really quick reference guide so that, you know, if you're having a problem, for example, with the IRP process, there's the log in the second column that all the log data is contained, and then these are the files that are used during preprocessing in the third column. Slide 37. So we also thought it would be good to include some tech notes for some common issues that customers are running into. So this isn't all of our tech notes, but these are, we think, some useful ones. So as we're running into problems, we're writing tech notes, and like I said, if you're seeing that catalog navigation view exception error, you're going to want to look in the solar logs and try to see if there's an error there. And if there is, Google that, and you might get lucky and find a tech note with a solution. Also, at the bottom of the slide here is APARs. These are some APARs that we recommend. I'll just go over a couple of them. The APAR one in the middle, JR 40305 and 40304, that's a cumulative fix for Feature Pack 2. So if you're not yet ready to go to you're on Feature Pack 2, and let's say you're not ready to go to Feature Pack 3 or Feature Pack 4, we recommend this cumulative fix so at least you can get a lot of the fixes that have made in the future or these other feature packs to kind of, you know, bolster your solar solution a little bit. And also the last APAR here, JR39904. So there's a couple of files that customers use to customize search profiles which are going to affect queries that are sent off to solar. And when you do that, you need to change this, or it's recommended to create a completely separate wcsearch.xml file in a completely separate extensions directory. The problem is that depending on which section of the wcsearch.xml you're modifying, the changes might not be merged properly from these two files. So we have an APAR that addresses that problem and fixes it, and again, that's JR39904. So if you're customizing search profiles or doing some advanced search stuff, we recommend this APAR. Next slide. Okay, so that concludes the presentation part. We're going to have some question answering in a bit, but basically we took a quick look at architectural overview, and then we covered three big areas that customers are seeing problems with solar. So I'm going to hand the presentation over to Joseph now.
Thank you, Brandon, Conway, and Eric for a great presentation. At this point in time, Rico, we would like to open line for questions.
And at this time, we have no questions in the queue.
Thank you, Rico. I see a question here in the group chat. The question is, in a sales catalog, a catalog can have multiple parent catalogs. Is that scenario not supported if we use Commerce Search?
No, that's supported. The error that Eric was talking about happens specifically if you have a cat entry having multiple parent catalogs for the master catalog. But we treat sales catalog differently, and we know that can happen. So that's still supported with Commerce Search.
Thank you, Brandon. The next question we have here is, are there any plans to include a reference web app that can be used to visually query the SOLR index rather than issuing HTTP requests or reading XML responses? I have tried using Luke, but it is not very user-friendly.
So Solr has an admin console. We don't include it with our version of Solr that we ship with the feature packs, but we do have a link in the info center that I can dig up somewhere that is a link to the Solr page that shows you how you can download the admin console. And I've never used the admin console, but my understanding is it's people find it a bit easier than using Luke or than sending those direct XML queries. So I would recommend that. And I can try to find that link right now, and I'll try pasting it into the chat if I can find it.
Thank you, Brendan. Okay, so I have a question here in the group chat. The question is, I'm not sure if my question is similar to the other question, but in SOLR, you can query multiple facets and categories. When will that support be added to commerce?
So we've been getting that feedback a lot from a lot of customers that they want multi-select facets. So I know that there are plans to introduce that in a future release so that you can select multiple values for a single facet, but we can't really comment on when that's going to happen. We've heard a bunch of feedback, so we're responding to that, and we're gonna add it in a future release.
Thanks, Brendan. All right, so here is another question through the web conference. If we perform full index on master catalog with multi-language or multi-core, is there a possibility to perform full index on each language-specific or region-specific cores individually?
So I'm not sure that I understand the question. I'll say what I think he's asking, and then you can let me know if I'm right or not. But I think what you're saying is basically you might have a whole bunch of indexes depending on if you have a lot of languages or a lot of cores or something like that. So you're wondering, when you kick off build index on commerce, is there a way that you can just build the index for one specific core? So there's a parameter in build index where you can specify the language and also the catalog. So that should narrow down the only build that specific core using the parameters that we specify in build index. Also, what you can do, the build index command that we have in Solr is basically a wrapper that sends a URL over to the Solr server. So you can always kind of skip the commerce build index if you find that easier, and just send a URL directly to the Solr server with the specific index that you want to build.
Thank you, Brendan. So at this point in time, it looks like we don't have any other questions over the web conference. So at this point in time, we will conclude the presentation.